delving into the settlement and reading it, I don't think it really does very much for the district, but get you out of litigation.
Benefit the community all that much. Mr. Scholes spoke at a forum in Grover Beach and said something I hadn't heard here, which is where the settlement comes from, that some $227,000 was going to go to the Pismo Beach Recycling Regional Project. That's not at all the case. There is $221,962.56 going to the Northern Cities Management Area in a groundwater modeling program. That's not the same thing. Not at all the same thing. And you wouldn't want the money going directly to the City of Pismo Beach's recycling program. I've written a three-page letter, and some of the things that I call out, and that is one in particular, is that you are only a fractional portion of the NCMA. In the order, in the settlement, you are saying that you will agree to the Northern Cities Management Area schedule of the project. Starts in November of 16, ends in November of 18. You have no control over that. You're only fractional members. Furthermore, the project is $675,000. Yes, $221,962.56 will take a nice chunk off of it, but you are fractional interests in that partnership, and you should be credited your fractional interest in this money towards that project. I'm worried that with two very disadvantaged communities, that you're not getting the best bang for the buck with this settlement, and that these details really need to be vetted further. It's not a race to get out of this litigation or to get this settlement under your belt. You need to get it right. And I hope you take the time to look at the letter. It's already been sent to the water board. But I make some other points, and I hope we can discuss them in a public forum.
Thank you for those comments, Julie. Is there anyone else?
This is a staff meeting. Sorry, good evening, Beatrice Spencer, Roy Grandy. I just wanted to make a couple comments after attending the last meeting to express my dissatisfaction and, quite honestly, disbelief at what was allowed to happen here. As an employer, I understand employee rights. This board did very little to stop something that should have been stopped dead in its tracks. And as a result, I feel like you have opened yourselves, this district, up to potential possible litigation. Chair did nothing. Legal counsel did nothing to stop a rant that just should not have been allowed to continue. And I don't understand why this board isn't acting on the district ratepayers' best interests in trying to avoid anything like that that could potentially result in litigation. I don't feel like we're being adequately, fairly, and justly represented on this side of the microphone by you three up there, and that is really discouraging. So I think you people need a lesson in employee rights or something before you allow something like that to ever happen again. Thank you.
Is there anyone else?
Ron Arnoldson, Grover Beach. I just wanted to thank this board. I've been coming about a year and a half or maybe 2 years to the board, and thank you for the entertainment. It seems like the most recent entertainment has been with the district administrator moving a trailer on site that wasn't permitted. It's kind of surprising that the district administrator, who is, I would imagine, from my point of view, the professional of the group, wasn't aware that needed to be permitted or legal people didn't have any advice for that, and a recovering planner who was our chairperson didn't have anything to say about that. So it's kind of interesting that that happened. The other interesting that's been the only funny thing that's happened with the district administrator is that he becomes the leader of a sanitation district and then realizes that where he works stinks and wants to move away from there, wants to not work there. It's just entertainment. Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Please come forward and state your, just your name for the record, please.
Good evening. My name is John Carter. My address is 1778 Aloha Place here in Oceano.
Excuse me for a second, Mr. Clark.
Right. I don't know.
So is there, what does he have, something on the flash drive?
Is there a presentation that you're looking for us to load up? Yeah, it's on that flash drive. I'm sorry I'm late. I'm to the wrong address down there.
No, it's fine. I just want to make sure that whatever you've given us, we have the ability to put it up for you.
Certainly.
Okay. Mr. Carter, is it this that you're...
Yeah, that's what I'm going to speak to. That's the details,
okay,
and I want to summarize that. I'm going to do my very best to get it done in 3 minutes.
Very good. We'll start over. You have 3 minutes, sir.
Okay, should I start? Okay, my name is John Carter. I live at 1778 Aloha Place here in Oceano. My purpose here this evening is to highlight improvements associated with the public safety and security at the sanitation facility and county properties, including the Arroyo Grande Flood Control Channel. Myself and Joe Schachter realize that not all homeless vagrants are transients, and not all homeless are vagrants, and some are in need of both social assistance and mental health counseling. In contrast, we believe the vagrants are the majority, and they will do nearly anything to acquire alcohol and drugs, including panhandling, pilfering, and prostitution. If I could slide one. That's not the right slide. A key area of that's... You have to go to the directory that's the sanitation facility. Sanitation facility. And if you could, okay, this is the presentation. That's the introduction slide. My name is John Carter. I live here in Oceano, and Joe Schachter. Very good. Which button? Okay. Let me start at the point where this is a homeless issue, okay? And I understand there are differences between transients, vagrants, and homeless. I don't put the homeless into the category that I put vagrants into. And that's as I was saying, the vagrants are people who will do nearly anything to acquire alcohol and drugs. Okay, slide one. A key area of my concern tonight is the footbridge at the corner of Aloha Place and Security Court. This is a popular access point for many vagrants because it is easy to walk or ride bikes on paved roads with or without attached carriages that are typically stacked with trash bags and pushing shopping carts as opposed to riding and walking on sand and dirt trails. The point is, you have easy access to the sanitation facility property and county property and the Rio Grande Flood Control via the paved roads that lead up to the footbridge. How did we get to where we are today? During the latter part of 2015, the area between the sanitation facility and the flood control channel became an ideal area for vagrants. As vagrants' number increased, so did the accumulation of trash and fecal matter. With the winter rains in 2016, the area became filthy with floating garbage and sewage. Okay, one of our recommendations at that point was to erect a sign to provide notice that it was illegal to camp or trespass in that area. That recommendation was acted on and signs were posted, and it was a good positive for the area. The sanitation facility also installed and extended fences at their entrance location on Aloha Place to prevent vagrants from accessing their property along the fence line next to the AG flood control channel, the North Levee portion. Subsequently, in April of that year, myself and other residents in the area supported a cleanup of all the area that was on county property and sanitation property. And that included coordination with John Clemens and the sanitation facility. Not only did we pull all the garbage out, but the OCSD provided a large dumpster that was loaded up and filled and taken to the landfill. Okay, this is an example of continuing support by the sanitation facility where they're picking up trash and garbage that has been excavated out of the county property as well as the sanitation facility's property. I'd also like to add that continuing support came from the Oceana Sheriff Substation, who had been responsive to many calls regarding intoxicated and loud vagrants, mostly late at night and early in the morning, as well as illegal camping as identified by myself and others who have periodically inspected this area for vagrants. Currently, these actions have eliminated the persistent camping on sanitation facility and county properties, but not the overnight camping on these properties, which remain, and that results in the accumulation of additional trash, which myself and others go through and clean out. Okay, the campsites and the flood control channel include many types of trash, and I won't go into the details of all the trash types that I've noticed, but it's basic trash, sewage, garbage, and hazardous waste. What I'm concerned about is when the rains begin later this year, and if we get a normal rainfall, it is highly probable that Oceano Beach, north and south, will be polluted by the trash and hazardous waste that is accumulated if that trash is not removed. That picture was taken today down in the flood at the base of the flood control channel. So this is an issue for all of us. Okay, this is what it looked like in January of 2016 on not only county property, but on sanitation property. You can see it's a mess. You can see a container there that was probably used for gasoline or something like that. At any rate, I would say as a result of the actions by the sanitation facility, OCSD, and the community, we've had a good positive response. That area is cleaned up now. It's cleaned up and it's looking good. Okay, the last point is some recommendations here. We believe that further improvements could be attained by erecting a fence with a lockable gate at the entrance to the footbridge on Security Court. This worked well for the entrance to the sanitation facility, and we believe it will work here. Managing this access would eliminate nearly all the foot and bicycle traffic on Lakeside Avenue, Aloha Place, and Security Court, and stop the traffic to the flood control channel from the footbridge. This would also minimize calls to law enforcement since vagrants and supporting vehicles would not be transiting this area. It would also reduce the voluntary removal of trash by local residents as well as the sanitation facility. I hope that's all I have. If you have some questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carter. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Is there anyone? Yeah, let me close this. Let me see if there's anyone else who wants to talk first. Is there anyone else that would like to comment in public comment? Seeing no one come forward, let me close it. Tim?
Can you follow up and figure out whether that's a viable alternative to put some sort of locking gate on that bridge?
Certainly. We can meet with Mr. Carter, we have in the past, and see who would be, one, where the property is, with right. the proper permits that would need to right, be right. obtained, and then the cost.
Right. But if you could just look into it, I appreciate it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah, I was going to say that. So, but let's determine whose property it's on, whose jurisdiction, and all those. It's okay.
All right. Mr. Gerhardt, yeah, is Mayor? That actually going to, I understand that that's one route, but the other route is coming right off the levee into the Sand District property. When we talked about fencing a year ago at this table, I was led to believe that the fencing went all the way around the sanitation property, but it's fencing that only goes around the plant. So there's still property that's not in a fenced area for the Sand District.
That is correct. There are two. There's wow. a fence around our facility.
Just the facility, the not facility. To be confused with property, right?
Correct. We do not have a fence around the entire property line.
Okay, and they're predominantly camping on that property there.
Yes, there's no homeless camp within our facility, within our fence line. It's within all outside your, of the, where there is homeless, it is outside the fence line, perhaps
in the property
line.
On in the property. Areas. All right.
Okay. Very good. Then let's move on. We are going to move to our consent agenda tonight.
There are two items. 5A is approval of minutes, and 5B is approval of warrants. Does anyone have any? Okay.
How's that? I was always told don't lean into a punch. So it says on page 3 that a Ms. Tacker, Debbie Peterson, and Patricia Pice gave input on an item, but it doesn't talk about what type of input. Was it for or opposed, or what was the gist of those comments by those people?
And that's in regards to the initiative, outreach initiative, including
Correct.
Newsletter and website overhaul.
Correct. That's my only question, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Mary, you have anything?
I'm fine with approving the minutes, except for there is quite a few clerical errors and spellings, and so I'd be happy to make a motion to accept them, but if we could go back and put the punctuation in and clear out some of the spacing and some typos.
Okay. I think I do have one thing, one on the minutes myself. This is on page 4, and this is where it talks about chairman shows open the item to public comment, and it lists a bunch of several ratepayers who spoke. And it says all in favor of Dr. Hill's motion to the board, that the board formally repudiate Director Lucy's comments. I think it really should say they spoke in support of Director Hill, because there was no motion at that time. When you look at it, he made a motion later. I think that captures the essence. Okay. No. Okay. Anyway.
I move that we accept the minutes.
Well, let me see.
Do you want to table them?
No, we don't need to table them.
Okay.
We're going to see if the public has any comments on these items.
Are you on just the minutes or the whole consent calendar?
We're on the whole consent calendar.
Okay. Your minutes seem to have been scoured. I think some months or a year ago, we talked about them being more like what Mr. Brown is saying, in that they actually capture the comments from the community. There's one portion on page 5 where it adds attachments, and those are the attachments that Ms. Lucy and Mr. Hill submitted for the record for the censure. One item, and I brought it to your attention that night, was this email that the banner had been cut off the top. I have subsequently done a public records request for the original email with the origin and the banner, and that has not been fulfilled.
Julie, are you speaking to the minutes?
I'm absolutely speaking to the minutes.
Okay.
Right there. They're attached to the minutes. Maybe you don't have the same packet.
No.
But it's in the packet for the public. So I would like someone to follow up on the actual public record. Ms. Lucy doesn't have the right to redact. She has no right, or Mr. Gearhart, Mr. Huebner, whoever did the redacting, had no right to redact public records, and I would like the actual origin of the document. I'd also like to speak to your warrants. There's a warrant for Downey Brand.
Yeah, it's on consent. I'm going to let her speak on both.
Are we going?
Yeah.
All right, here we go. Downey Brand, $874. I thought we were done with her. Mr. Huebner has a medical reimbursement, but he does not have reimbursement for his trip to Sacramento, which I did get the cost associated with that. He led us to believe that he went up there and back in one day. I thought he drove. He gets a car allowance, but no. He flew. He stayed in a hotel. He rented a car, and yes, of course he can have meals. But the trip cost over $700. I'm very concerned about the Alicia Laura invoice for $6,100. I am aware that it is a personnel matter, and I have seen two grievances from two of your employees. I thought we were getting out of the litigation business. It appears we're getting into the litigation business when it comes to personnel. There's an $11,022 invoice to Mike Nunley for a wastewater treatment site alternatives analysis. What drove this? Where is the correspondence from the Coastal Commission that asked for this? And why didn't your board have a say in it? Your board has the right to tell the Coastal Commission to stick it if you don't want to do what they're asking. You didn't get that opportunity. If they asked you to do a sites alternative analysis, you don't know that because your administrator didn't bring that to you. You may have said, no, it's too costly. We're not going to spend the money that way. We have no interest in moving our site. Whatever your reasons would be, you didn't have that opportunity because your administrator didn't give it to you. Water System Consulting has a $14,965 invoice on here. I'm looking forward to the report on the satellite water recycling, water facility study, and I'd like a date when that could be expected.
Is there anyone else that would like to comment on the consent agenda? Seeing no one come forward, let me close it and bring it back to the board. What's the pleasure of the board?
I have some.
Oh, Jim, oh, that's right, Tim, you had some comments. You had some comments or questions.
Questions and comments.
Okay.
First of all, I'm not sure, I apologize. John, is this part of the consent agenda as well? Number eight?
No, 5A and 5B are the only two items on consent.
Okay, so
the approval of the minutes for September 21st and approval of warrants.
Thank you. So I have, I think you've heard part of the questions already. I'm going to maybe couch them in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And so regarding the McNunley Associates charge of $11,000 and change,
mm-hmm.
For water treatment site alternatives, can you give me some history on that?
Certainly. So, as you know, we've been working with Coastal Commission in the permitting, obtaining the coastal development permit. We have an application pending with them. In August, we submitted a package of information for them. We had an August 16th teleconference with them where they indicated that they needed a few additional pieces of information. We were looking to keep the permitting on track, to get it on their agenda. They indicated that they needed a rough alternative analysis. I found an opportunity to utilize I have existing authority with MKN of $100,000, and we have capacity there. They had the capacity and the ability to complete the work, and they did it in an amazingly short period of time. And produce a quality product, which we submitted to the Coastal Commission on September 9th.
Okay.
I also have authority
Hold on, can I just interrupt you? I apologize, but
all right.
Otherwise I'll lose my train of thought.
All right.
Where's the work product for that?
The work product was referenced in my September 21st district administrative report. In that package, there's the cover letter that clearly describes this alternative report and what we were accomplishing, and it's listed as one of the attachments.
So the report was an attachment?
The report is one of the attachments. There was about four or five other attachments that we also submitted with that September 9th. So the comment that somehow that the board wasn't aware is incorrect. I did submit it and describe it. We typically in agencies that I've worked for, including this, you don't include every attachment. Certainly they are available, and we have made it available to the board. I have not yet made it available to the alternate.
Okay. And then the other question I have, is this part of the same project that you're doing for the satellite water facility study, or is it different?
It's different. So this is an analysis the Coastal Commission wanted to see if we've considered if there's shoreline retreat in their vernacular, have we considered the possibility of basically picking up our treatment facility and moving it somewhere else? So we did a rough analysis of the cost, which the report details, and it's astronomical, as we've indicated in the past, and some of the constraints in terms of permitting, neighborhood issues, property availability, and so forth. The satellite grant is specifically to look at reclamation. Where can reclamation perhaps be best located? At the district facility or offsite somewhere in the community? And that work is proceeding.
Okay, great. I appreciate the clarity. And then I have a question. There's a number of costs for chemicals that add up to about $18,621. And it seems for chemicals, is it a one-time deal or is it just seems awfully high?
Ms. Clemens, would you like to answer that question?
Yes, we use a number of chemicals. They're pretty expensive. One of them is the polymer. We use polymer when we send our sludge to our sludge bed and when we to help cake the sludge or bring it together, coagulate it. The chlorine comes around. We're using a lot less chlorine than we ever have. We're using actually less polymer than we ever had because we used to use it. So, you know, those costs come around. We have it delivered as needed. But if you look at, for instance, last year's audit, you'll see that our chemical costs are actually low. But this right. just happens to be one of those.
One of those. It's like, yeah. What does it come around every few months or something? Or?
Well, yeah. For instance, we get a 5,000-gallon delivery of chlorine. We use 100 pounds a day. So you're talking roughly a month and a half, 2 months in chlorine. Polymer comes in totes. It depends on how often we run our centrifuge. So we don't have it regular enough to have it on a schedule. We just order. We get to a certain point and we order as needed. And we do. We are very conscious of how much of each
no,
of
I
these.
No, I know you are. You've done a great job. I appreciate the clarity. Thanks.
Okay, Mary. You have any questions?
On the warrant pack, you have NDS did a billing. They did not do a billing for Oceana Community Services District. They did a billing for the residents in the Oceana area. Is that correct?
I believe that's a better way of describing, yes.
But it wasn't for the district. It was for the ratepayers.
It was ratepayers to collect the wastewater fee
right.
that we
so
have.
That needs to be changed because it's not OCSD.
Maybe Amy?
The budget line item, if you look at a budget, that's the OCSD billing and that's what I coded it to. I could change the name of that in a budget review if you'd like.
Or, yeah, just put Oceana billing or something.
Okay.
Because it implies it's for that district and it's not. So that'd be great. Thank you.
Okay.
And then under, no, that was already clarified. That was my only question. Thank you.
Okay, someone prepared to make a motion?
Move for approval.
Second.
Okay, there's a motion and a second, and that's for consent agenda. Mr. Roll call.
Chairman Schultz?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Director Brown?
Yes.
Okay, very good. District Administrator and Plant Superintendent's report, Mr. Gerhardt. Mr.
Thank
Huebner.
You, Chair.
Sorry
Thank
about
you,
that.
Chair Schultz, members of the directors, members of the audience. First correction I need to make is there is an error. It's actually the October 5th, 2016 report, not September 21st. So with that notation, I'm gonna go relatively quickly through this, updating you on several of our projects and where we're at. First starting with our district settlements with the regional board of the spill. There is a draft order. It's been signed both by both parties. My understanding that the comment period ends October 6th, may end sooner, but that is my understanding. As I've presented in the past, we do have our district special counsel, and you saw in the warrant register, they did expend some effort, a little bit of effort, not a lot, to jointly work with DOJ attorneys to extend in the Superior Court our stipulated stay. So. That's covered. Moving on to our Cherry Avenue sewer bridge project, we did complete the notice of determination with the County of San Luis Obispo, as well as the permit applications and fees with both the regional board and the Department of Fish and Wildlife. Regarding our grit removal system, We do have a change order, and as the board directed in the past, they did wanted us to detail when these change orders came forth. This change order shouldn't come as a surprise. We did mention that we encountered, or the contractor encountered shallow groundwater and had to do dewatering operations, bring a Baker tank out there, and related to finding our pipe slightly different depth than some of the drawings had shown.
Are you moving to the next item?
I was going to, but I think
Mr.
I can.
Mr. Chair, do you mind if I ask him a quick question?
Are you okay?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Just in regarding to the permitting for that, for the grit removal system?
Yes.
Is that something we need to be doing, or is that part and parcel of what the contractor would do?
Well, typically, permitting is put in the specs, my experience in public works projects. It is unclear to me, and I'd have to do a little bit of research, that was accomplished. I don't believe any permits were actually pulled for that particular project. That will be something that I'll detail a little bit later in terms of the historical and current practices of projects that have been built at the facility. That will be one that we'll have to do a little bit more research.
Okay, thank you for that. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
It is moving forward now that they are setting the forms, and perhaps even the concrete the placement of the foundation is really the next step. Regarding our mechanical bar screen project, we are awaiting a notice, essentially waiting for a form. The insurance, I believe, in the bond requirements have now been met, and we expect a notice to proceed to be issued shortly. Moving down to our redundancy project, I mentioned previously about the September, at our September 9th board meeting and our September 9th submittal. Again, that cover letter is out. Those reference materials are available if anybody would like a copy. We also will be following up with Coastal Commission shortly, because the 30-day window will be shortly coming up in October. We have a separate item today to talk about funding, so I won't go into any more particulars on that. Our satellite recovery facility grant is also proceeding. I had a meeting yesterday with our partner in AG. Actually, we had it at AG's office. I want to announce that we're looking to have a workshop on the draft report likely at our December 7th board meeting. So look forward to that. Moving on, regarding our trailer, we did submit a CDP application to Coastal Commission staff in compliance with the state and fed requirements, state requirements. I'm also continuing to do some research and look at some of the past files. In fact, I've been in contact with the Wallace Group to see what's been permitted in the past, and I'll continue to do that research and report that back to the board. Regarding regional efforts, today there was a Water Resource Advisory Committee meeting. Specifically, they talked about some geophysical methods that are available for groundwater modeling or groundwater characterization in SGMA. Also was given an update on the state of the county's reservoirs. And there was a suggestion of Director Lucy, you made the suggestion on a future agenda, perhaps at the next meeting, looking at that more closely. Our Northern Management Area Technical Group has been meeting, and we've had several teleconferences. They are planning to submit a letter on the settlement. Specifically, they are looking to refine that effort to make it useful to not only the agencies that are part of the Sand District, Oceano, Grover Beach, Rio Grande, well, the Sand District, and then, of course, PISMO will also benefit. The county has also indicated that they're interested in helping fund that effort, so this is becoming a really great regional effort where our settlement money will really benefit or leverage a better modeling effort. So that's a very positive development. Regarding outreach efforts, Ms. Simpson and I have approached Grover Beach and AG, and I've approached Oceano about including our public outreach, our newsletter that the board approved, and future billing. It's a matter of getting on their next cycle, but I'm encouraged that they're amenable to doing that. Our record management, really that's just beginning, trying to compile what other agencies are doing in terms of policy. We need to look at ours, update ours, and bring that back to the board at a future date. And then wastewater plant data analysis and operations. I put together some talking points, some rough talking points. I've looked at some of the data. Chair Scholz, what I would like to do is perhaps postpone that presentation perhaps to the next meeting or the November 4th meeting. It's a little rough right now what I've put together, and in, perhaps in the interest of time, maybe that should be a separate item. But if you'd like me to proceed, I am prepared today to do that. And that concludes my report today, unless you wish me to proceed with sort of the data.
No, I won't. Let's, I think there's no time-sensitive item on this. No. We want you to make sure that you have the information correct and what you're presenting to us. So okay. I think we're okay. Everyone okay with that?
Yeah.
All right.
I have a question for you.
Mary, go ahead. You have a question?
Mr. Huebner, when the billing practices for services was broke up, and Oceano was sent on to the county tax rolls, the bills for the property taxes have come in. And so I was wondering, and there is a line item on there for the sanitation department. So it's, I think it's 231 or 237 for a single family residence. I wanted to know when the other two entities would be following. We were supposed to be the experiment. And so I'd like a date on a month on when the other two member agencies.
I have engaged, I've engaged the city of Grover Beach, and I have continuous discussions with them regarding particulars. There's not much disagreement, but there's a little bit of nuance in terms of the agreement that we have, the draft agreement we have. So I have engaged with them with that, but it needs to proceed a little bit to the next step. And Rio Grande have not yet fully engaged them, although I indications that they previously accepted the past agreement, and I have no indication that they wouldn't accept it into the future. So I have to report that I'm not as far along as I'd like to be, but I expect with a little bit more engagement, we can move those along pretty quickly.
Okay, great. So we expect that at the beginning of the year or something like that?
Oh, if not sooner.
Okay, great. Thank you, sir.
Tim, you have any questions?
No, thank you.
Okay. I think Mr. Clemens is next, right?
Yes. Good evening, Chair Bichols and Board. During this reporting period, facility were within our limits. I've also attached a ocean testing results or beach sampling to clarify a statement that was made about the district polluting the ocean, but I'll get back to that. As you can see in our plant data, once again, we met all of our requirements for this period. Operation and maintenance projects, we drained our and cleaned our CCT, flushed our FFR, repaired broken fitting at a secondary clarifier scum hopper and clogged scum hopper, reassembled Moino sludge pump, troubleshot variable frequency drive, began work preparation for wet weather season, and did our various work orders and marked some underground service alerts. In the area of training, we attended a chlorine control system training session conducted by representatives from Indris Hauser. The good news on that is, as you see, our chlorine for September, we used about 235 pounds a day. Since we had the Indris Hauser's reps down and they trained our staff and we recalibrated the equipment, we've been averaging somewhere in the neighborhood of 150 pounds a day, some days 125 pounds. Why that's significant is the fact that we pay about 85 cents a gallon for the chlorine. So when we go from 235 to 150, we're essentially saving the district 80 bucks a day, 800 bucks 10 days, 240 bucks a month, and you can do the math. So it's a significant savings just in what we've done here recently. Also, myself and Operator DeLeon attended a CWA Tri-State training conference in Vegas. I myself attended classes on aeration, nutrient removal. It's interesting that the conference was themed the professional operator, and it was aimed at the idea that operators should be should approach our trade as a profession. And so it was a very good conference. It was a three-day conference. I think I attended 19 sessions in the three-day time period. Mario also attended 19 sessions in the three-day time period. It's very productive. It's a pretty inexpensive conference in that it's only $99, whereas most of our conferences are more in the area of $500 or $600. So it was a good value for the district. My only disappointment is we didn't send a couple more operators. It was a very productive meeting. Getting back to the total coliform E. coli, first, I'm just going to try to clarify. One of my hats at the district, or my job actually, is lab director. I'm in charge and responsible to the state of California for what happens in our lab. So when we start talking E. coli and total coliform and fecal coliform, I do have some knowledge in that. Just for clarification, because I've heard the public comment on it, and I've also heard the board comment on it, coliform are basically indicator bacteria. So when you get total coliform, that's basically, and this is a quick high-level lesson, it's just a bacteria that occurs in the environment, normal bacteria, nothing dangerous about coliform in general. The next thing would be fecal coliform, and fecal coliform are indicators of bacteria that come from the intestines or tract or fecal matter from a warm-blooded animal. And, you know, as you start dealing with warm-blooded animals, of course, now you start talking about pathogens. E. coli are fecal bacteria, but they're more specific to the intestinal tract of the human being. We happen to have intestinal tract that's more likely to carry pathogens than most other creatures. So when you start testing, you test for total first, then you test for fecal, and then if you want to, you go on and test further for E. coli. And again, all of them are indicator bacteria. The bacteria themselves are not pathogenic. It's just that a fecal and a E. coli bacteria are more likely to carry pathogens. The tests themselves result in a number called an MPN. That's a most probable number. And so as you look at them and you survey them, sometimes they can hide behind each other. It's not an exact number. It's just an indicator of a possibility of pathogens. And again, the different bacteria classifications give an indication that they're more likely a chance of a pathogenic infestation. So our sanitation district at our lab, we test for fecal bacteria. We test for a broader range. You could test for E. coli or fecal. If you test for E. coli, you eliminate some. But we test for fecal, which includes E. coli, but it covers some other bacteria. I included the beach sample, which PISMO has a lab go out and sample on a monthly basis. And they actually test for E. coli on the beach samples. As you look at the chart and you see our beach sampling points, we basically tested an area directly adjacent to where our outfall goes out into the ocean, 4,000 feet, and then we test 1,000 feet on either side of that to test for the possibility of fecal or E. coli contamination. Again, not to be mixed up with what our district tests for, which is fecals. So now, a little more understanding of all that. So, as you can see from our beach samples, the results from the E. coli test are less than 10 on our beach samples. That's an indicator that we're not necessarily contaminating the beach beyond repair.
Excuse me, John, I don't mean to interrupt you. Are you looking at this one right here?
Yes.
It says the city of Pismo Beach on it.
I'd say that Pismo test. They test.
This is it.
They have the same outfall we do. So when they test, it's the same exact same test we would perform if we were doing it. It's instead, okay, they do it. So they perform the test. I went and got these tests. Actually, they wanted to give me 6 months worth because they're all the same. The point is, there's no evidence of any contamination coming from our outfall. Okay. I think that's important because when we say that we're contaminating the ocean, then we leave ourselves open to a lot of things, a lot of lawsuits. Somebody gets infected, you know, that's just something that's not wise for our district to put out there. So I wanted to make it clear that our district, there's no evidence that there's any excessive contamination in the ocean coming as a result of this district discharging in the ocean.
And you're speaking direct just of E. coli, correct?
E. coli and they test for E. coli, yes.
So, but this test that you're speaking of that's less than 10 is strictly for that bacteria?
That's what the state requires, yes.
Yeah, I just wanted to make sure it was just for the E. coli and not for other antigens or pathogens.
If we...
I just need clarification.
I could just speak to what's on the paper. We have E. coli. Okay.
Yeah, and you did answer it well. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, John.
One other thing I'd like to clarify, another one more minute.
Okay. I want to make sure we stick into the report, because I know there was some direction given the last time that we would like to capture information that was inaccurate information that was given at a previous meeting and tried to correct them all at one time. So, but go ahead, John, and I think after that, then we're going to make sure the team's working together and identify. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I'm just going to say there was another comment made about while I was acting interim administrator, how the district operations fell apart. Well, actually, while I was in the 8 months I was acting interim administrator, there was only one recorded violation, and even that was thought more likely to be a lab error. And actually, in the eight months prior to the 8 months that I served, we had 4 violations. And then the 6 months since I stopped serving, we've had 2 more violations. Point being, we actually had one of our best stretches operationally while I was sitting in the seat of administrator. So again, great. I wanted facts to refute some stuff that was just thrown out there.
Thank you, John.
Thank you.
And we're definitely interested in the correct information. I just want to make sure we do it in a comprehensive manner. That's all. I understand.
Mr. Thanks. Chair, does that mean we're going to come back again and talk about it? Or what?
So the direction that was given. So, you know, we're trying to run a meeting, and it would be really helpful, Julie, if you can, you know, when the time comes, I'm going to give you an opportunity to speak. So,
Let's just move on.
Okay. So basically, Tim, to answer your question, there was direction given to staff to capture as much as we could that was information that was misrepresented or inaccurate, and try to come back and provide information, whether it's in the meeting or through providing answers online or whatever.
And as I mentioned earlier, roughly was prepared to do that, but I want to confirm that, and I would like to come back and put some of the data, the violations, in context of a broader discussion.
Okay, very good. Okay.
I'd like to be included in that, please.
John, we don't need to air this in public. I think I want you gentlemen to work these things out before we come to this meeting so that we can, you know,
yes,
understand.
Sir. Yes,
thank
sir.
You. Okay. And I understand. I know that you did some good work and all that, and I understand. So, but... I think I'm going to leave that alone. So I think we're clear where we're trying to go. Okay.
Great.
Is there anyone from the community that would like to comment on the district administrator and the plant superintendent's report?
Julie Tacker, and I'll start with the superintendent's report and just say that E. coli, the number one most common carrier is cattle, then sheep, pig, deer, dogs, and poultry, because people use facilities generally, and so we're a little more civilized. Mr. Clemens speaks to training, and in doing some of my research for my letter, I came across a June 2015 report that he had written, and I found it interesting after reading the grievances from 2 employees, that 3 of your operators were I can speak to training, and that's what I'm doing. Ms. Lucy is interrupting me, sir.
I understand.
Okay, will you ask her to either wait or step outside, whatever it takes to not interrupt me?
Hold on. If you let me get to the point, yes, I've tried to be fair, and I'm going to keep doing that. So, Mary, let's let her finish.
It doesn't matter if your mic is off. She says her mic is off so she can interrupt me.
You have 3 minutes.
Right.
Let's go.
So let me have them uninterrupted.
I've just said you're going to have 3 minutes uninterrupted, so please.
Let's see. So three of your operators received their state certification as grade 3 operators. This is a very valuable certificate, and I'm sure your district invested in those individuals. Apparently, the district is now moving the goalposts to be a grade 3 operator at this plant. And that is something that your board.
So now you are talking about.
I'm talking about training.
You're talking about procedures and HR issues, Julie.
And I'm talking about the training.
Okay.
I'm talking about the training. These are highly qualified individuals, and something's going on. And maybe you haven't seen these grievances, but something's going on that they're not allowed to move up in a promotional manner that is customary in this district. I'd like to speak to the district administrator's report. I'll start with his permit application for the trailer and the C-train. I've seen the application. It's incomplete. It's inaccurate. One of the things that he says as justification for the trailer is that the men's room and the urinal need to be repaired, and that the HVAC system needs to be repaired. We know those jobs are complete. So why would he even mention those to the Coastal Commission? The other thing that is not on his report is the Liebert Cassidy Whitmore, $4,670. There's an investigation going on. Remember, I was called by an investigator. I'd like to know more about that. You'd think it would be part of the report. Something that he clarified was that about the alternatives analysis. He said he had a telephone conference call with the Coastal Commission in August and then gave your board a list of attachments and a cover letter at the September 21st district administrator's report. What was submitted to the Coastal Commission was submitted on September 9th. So you did not have any information about that expenditure until it had already happened. The grit removal, the question of whether or not it needed a permit, I asked that in a public meeting of Mr. Nunley, and he said no.
Is there anyone else? Seeing no one, I'm going to close it and bring it back. This is just a receive and file. Let's move on to action items, item 7A. I'm working on it.
Good evening, Chair Schultz, directors, members of the audience, Gerhard Huebner. I have a short PowerPoint presentation. I'll go through it very quickly. It follows the staff report. This is item 7A. This is a request for an authorization to proceed with a contract with Bartle Wells Associates. Some background as usual. As you recall, you completed a wastewater financial plan and a rate study in 2016, and with that, a rate increase to include a debt service for a future state revolving fund loan. The loan would provide funding for the district's redundancy project. The loans are a low-cost approach for public agencies to fund through the State Water Resource Control Board, wastewater projects. They are very favorable interest rates. 20 to 30-year financing is below 2%. The program offers planning and construction loans, and the repayment doesn't begin until 1 year after project completion. So a lot of benefits. If you recall, back in April, your board considered to postpone the staff request to proceed with the contracting with Bartle Wells Associates for consultant service to proceed with the financial portion of the SFR loan application. And concern was raised that it was perhaps premature since permitting had not proceeded very far at that time with the Coastal Commission. And the board directed staff to return with the item at a future date. Fast forward to June, the board, at that board meeting, you approved a resolution for us to proceed with the planning loan application. So planning loan application gets for the design portion, and so that application was submitted and is pending before the state board. And that was one of the meetings that I met with state board in late September, the staff there. At the August board meeting, I detailed some of the current issues and potential overcommitments within state revolving fund loan program. Again, recall with some of the information, the intel that I received from the state board staff, and indicated my director's district administrator report to be coming back at a future board meeting. And that leads us to today's item. So, state revolving fund loan application consists of four packages: financial, environmental, technical, and general, district and consultant staff, and that would be MKN, intend to complete the general environmental and technical packages using information from previous studies and work efforts. Proposal that you have for before you today, and that's attachment one in your packet, includes preparation of a financial package and supporting documents and technical support on an as-needed basis, so it's time and materials. Total contract amount is $18,500, again, time and material basis with for direct expenses, and then $500 if there are any incidental such as travel. So the proposal is broken into tasks A and B. A, the specific deliverables include the completion of the financial assistance package for the state revolving fund loan, assistance with adoption of required district resolutions, working with our district council, updated financial projections, and ability to respond to questions and information requests. Task B, so this is where it's different than what you saw back in April. This is essentially, it says Task B, but it's really Plan B. So if for some reason the state revolving fund loan program remains overcommitted and not capable of funding a construction loan for us, and they indicated, the staff at the state revolving fund loan said, you need to have a backup plan. So this Task B is to do exactly that, evaluate and identify financial alternatives, specifically the pros and cons of different approaches with the goal of finding us perhaps the most flexible financing options possible. Our financial projections will be updated. Debt service options, including phasing over a number of years, will be evaluated. So is there portions that we can phase, pay for, and so forth. Deliverable will include a draft and final report summarizing the findings and recommendations. And the consultant will be available to present their findings and recommendations to your board and answer any questions. So that's Task B. The schedule, both tasks are scheduled to be completed by the end of January, so pretty quick turnaround. We believe the proposal is cost-effective because this firm is familiar with our finances. They did our rate study. They're well-qualified in municipal financing, including preparation of state revolving fund applications, and again, in-depth knowledge and understanding of the district's finances. So with that, we do have a recommendation today that you authorize the district administrator to proceed with executing this contract with Bartle Wells and Associates for professional consultant services to complete the financing portion for the state revolving fund loan application. With that, I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Huebner. Any questions? No? No questions. Mary?
It's just for the state revolving fund that they'd be working on, or other options if they came our way?
They're both.
Okay.
The A is the state revolving fund loan application. The B is
anything goes.
Anything else. Anything okay. Beyond that. Looking at other institutions.
I just want to make sure that I read it right. And
yes.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Yep.
Is there anyone from the community that would like to speak on this item?
Good evening again. I'm Julie Tacker, and I'll be honest. I don't think you need to continue to hire consultants when you have a full-time administrator. if somehow your administrator doesn't have time for this kind of thing, maybe he should quit going to the rack and quit worrying about lake levels. You are a wastewater district, okay? He needs to be spending his time shepherding the applications through looking for other funding sources. He can do that. You hired him because of his relationships with the water board. State Revolving Fund is the water board. It is the water board. So I think he can do this work. I think he should do this work. A question that came up when you sent your application in, from I brought it to your attention, there were inaccuracies in that application. They were not consistent with the information you'd given the Coastal Commission about the project. It's like you're asking for funding for one project from State Revolving Fund, and an entirely different project is going before the Coastal Commission. So did those things get rectified? I know that was the direction. I know Mr. Hill said our numbers have to match. And I think Mr. Huebner said something about, well, we can amend it. No, it needs to be polished before it goes, because it looks amateur when it's filled with mistakes. So I would encourage your board to ask Mr. Huebner to do this work. Save your community $18,500. This was why you hired a full-time administrator.
Is there anyone else? Seeing no one come forward and bring it back to the board. Any questions, any comments from board members?
Can you comment to that general question about why it was put out to a consultant?
This is specialized expertise. I'm not an accountant. We don't have on staff this type of expertise that would complete this type of work, as we indicated, where there's portions of the application that we can do in-house, we will, but with any agency, you have to pull specialized. So it's unrealistic to portray that hiring a district administrator will come with every specialized expertise that this board will need.
Well, that really wasn't a question.
I'm sorry. Why this particular firm, or?
Why in this particular case? And you answered my question. You said it was due to specialization.
Yeah. So you answered the question.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Mary, you have any questions?
Can you just remind me what the amount was that we were asking the State Revolving Fund for the amount of the loan?
So we will need roughly $12 to $13 million to fund the construction portion of the project.
So we're the planning basically loan. $18,000 for technical assistance on?
Correct.
$13 million?
Potentially, yes. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, someone prepared to make a motion on this item?
I move that we accept staff's recommendations.
I'll second that. Mr. Roll Call.
Chairman Scholl?
Yes.
Director Lucy?
Yes.
Director Brown?
Yes. Call me whatever you want.
Okay, let's move on to item 7B. This is the newly installed SCADA system project. Mr. Clemens, is Mr. Clemens giving this? I'm sorry.
Yes. Chair Scholz.
Good evening, Chair Scholz and board. If you can indulge us for just a second, I wanted to see if Mike has brought some pictures to go along with the presentation. If he can get us plugged into the monitor there. In the meantime, this is a report to fill a request by the board to update the board on where we are with the SCADA system, what we've done. And so we went and got some historical background, and if we can get our pictures, then we can show exactly where we are now with regard to where we started and where we wanna be. As a matter, why don't I start off with just a basic explanation of what SCADA is. It's a process control application that collects data from sensors, machines around the plant, sends them to a central computer for logging, management, and control. So it's just a system that gets all your data and brings it to a central
Hang on a second, Sean. Mike, do you have that on a thumb drive or something that you could give to her?
Unfortunately, I only have these on the iPad right now.
Okay.
That was my fault. He sent them to me on the email, but I left before I was able to take them.
Well, can you email them to her and she can pull them up or no?
Why don't we take five while they do this?
Yeah, let's take a 5-minute break.
Thank you.
Is HE, are you guys ready to go back there, fellas? Okay. Okay, we're going to reconvene the meeting. So, John, you have the floor.
Okay, as I stated, SCADA is simply a control system which allows, we wire out to the different processes and in different equipment at the plant, brings the information back to a central computer so that the operators can monitor the entire plant from a single point. And if we configure it the right way, you could actually control, turn pumps on and off. And if we so choose, it would be an opportunity for operators to monitor the plant, say if they're on call from their cell phones or from an iPad. It's a system that's pretty standard in almost every water or wastewater treatment plant that I've ever been to. It's kind of surprising we didn't have one up. But starting back in 2009, the district did see a need, 1999, the district did see a need for this type of equipment. At that point, they called it data acquisition. Apparently, they began to implement it at that time, and over the years, the plan was to phase it in over a course of years. I couldn't find anything that had a specific timeline for anything. But again, the idea was to get a data acquisition system and phase it in. The project was budgeted in capital equipment, fund 8010, I believe it still is. Fund 208010, I believe it still is. And between the years 99 and 2013, I wasn't here, so I can just kind of give a general that the district worked on design, installation, and implementation of the SCADA system with limited success. In one of our attachments, I'll just go ahead and move forward. So at the January 24th board of director meeting, staff requested that the board approve a contract with F&M Controls from Fresno to evaluate and make recommendations for the full use of the SCADA system. Staff report documented that there was, at that time, $110,000 budgeted in fund 208010 for SCADA completion, as it's noted, and also called SCADA System Phase 3. In that report, Phase 3 was defined, actually. I want to make sure we get this right. Phase 3 was designed Phase three will be the biggest slice of implementation, which will bring the signals from the rest of the plant to the SCADA software. Budgeted funds for the $110,000 is budgeted to include screen development, but it's mostly infrastructure, deployment of summary PLCs, wiring to the PLCs, and running a fiber optic cable throughout the plant. I'm reading that because that's exactly what we've done thus far. During the discussion, the plant superintendent stated that the SCADA system had not been fully operational for about 3 years. So we know that from 2010 to 2013, the system did not operate. The shift supervisor at the time commented that the alarm system was operational at that time, but a few months later when I got here, the alarm system was not working and the SCADA was not working. At the June 19th Board of Director meeting, the board received a SCADA analysis report from the district manager. The analysis included information from the evaluation done by F&M Controls. Staff conclusions at that time was that the district should issue an RFP that focuses on key contracted work, on key components necessary for system completion. The conclusion went on to say once the contracted work is complete, staff would then be capable of creating screens to view the data, establishing alarm set points, trending data, and to meet its monitoring trending needs. In July of 2013, we issued a RFP. The RFP was written by the district engineer at the time, Shannon Sweeney. Shannon, myself, Eric Sweeney, who's an engineer also, Paul Karp, we all sat down and evaluated what we had read in the report, and we did an RFP. In the RFP, we wanted to include staff involvement. And so the RFP was written in a way that the staff would be fully involved in the construction and implementation of the system. As a result, the contractors, we got two responses from the contractors. Responses were that they could not do it because of liability issues, and they did not think that they could make the $110,000 budget. The liability issues were that they didn't want staff involved in it because they felt they'd be responsible if something went wrong that a staff member did, that they didn't want to be responsible. So at that time, we discussed it again, and we thought it was utterly important that the staff is involved in it and that we own that system. I don't know if it's been part of plants, but when you hire out your electronics and your IT to somebody else, you lose a lot of controls. And we did not want to give that away. Staff then opted to manage the project internally. At that time, it was going to be myself and mainly Eric Sweeney. Eric Sweeney he's an electrical engineer, so he has some familiarity. I have some familiarity with programming and with these SCADA systems. So we would work with an integrator. In this case, it became Kevin Seifert of AutoSys, and develop a SCADA system that will work. In the interim time, though, of course, Mrs. Sweeney left, and we had a lot of changeover. We had, three people retire, another person leave, and we've taken on five new employees. So it's not worked out in that case. It didn't work out initially the way we would. The changeover caused us not to have the time to address it right away. We kind of kept it going. If you look in the discussion section, I went to some training in 2014 and 2015 and 16 now. And then, of course, Mr. Arias, who is our plant supervisor, came on. And I basically appointed him because I just didn't have the time to address programming. When you program, you need to be able to sit down for hours at a time and do it. And my job just won't allow me to be able to sit for those periods of time. So basically, when Mike Arias came on, we began to train him immediately. We sent him to a lot of training. We continued to work with AutoSys. We also brought in Rockwell Automation. We've done a lot of training with Rockwell Automation. We can contact them on a moment's notice. One of the reasons we chose a Rockwell Automation is because we have the type of hardware we have, Allen Bradley controllers, PLCs, variable frequency drives are all Rockwell made. So it just seems like it was a perfect mate to bring their software into it. Actually, it's turned out to be a real blessing because now programming is kind of getting off a little bit, but programming is cutting in half because because they make the software and the hardware, instead of writing out whole programs, you can just kind of drag and drop and have them configure themselves. So that helped speed us up and get us back on track. The district, we purchased a lot of equipment as described in phase three. In phase three, the description was that most of the money would go for infrastructure. So we bought a new server, we have new software. When we tried to get into the system was actually on Windows XP, which is no longer served. So we had to throw that whole software system out in that server altogether. We bought an up-to-date server, we got new software. We have new programmable logic controllers in three different sections. We built one in the main building. We put one out by the headworks. We have one, another one in the MCC, and we have another box in where we're installing one at the FFR. And all those different places we'll be able to bring signals in and move them forward. To save a little bit of money on running wire, we've installed wireless antennas. So where we installed these boxes, we've also installed antennas. Now, instead of running wires through the ground and digging new holes and trenches, we just run the wires to the antennas, and then they broadcast the signals forward to the plant. So we have some custom-built PLC cabinets. When I say custom-built, that means our plant operators built these cabinets themselves. We didn't have them made out. We brought them in and built them ourselves. We have some new static switches, which are the Ethernet switches for communication. The old system had a system called Data Highway, and we thought we'd bring it up to the current standard, which is the Ethernet. We had four new Moxis wireless switches, new digital highway Ethernet converters, and so on and so forth. This is equipment that we've added. We also completed the following tasks. We constructed and installed PLCs at the Headworks MCC building. I already mentioned that. We installed wireless antennas and so on and so forth. So. And all that, again, was done mainly by our staff under the direction of our integrator and our Rockwell representatives, again, which is really important because now we own our own system and we know the components, we know how to run it. We feel that we've met the goals set forth. I don't have the numbers here, but we, at this point, we went back and we reviewed costs. We're at $99,000 total cost thus far for what we've done. With that $99,000, we do have a SCADA screen up. We do have trending available. What we don't have thus far, though, is we don't have Historian. Historian is a software that that records the trending. In other words, we can trend, and as long as we don't turn, and when we say trend, we're talking the charts that you see that we can look back and see how far, how fast we were flowing, how pumps were motor, how, you know, you can look back and see a visual indicator of how everything was running. The problem that we have now, or not problem, but where we need to progress to, is we don't have a Historian. So anytime the computer goes off, then we lose all that data. And so a Historian allows us to collect that data and store it, and so that when the state comes asking or when we need historical data for a new project, we have all that data stored on Historian. Another thing that we haven't gotten is a WINS 911 auto dialer. But we could go two ways. We still have the old auto dialer system, but WINS 911 is better. The WINS 911 auto dialer would be $4,200 roughly. The Historian software would be $4,900. And so those are the two components that we'd like to have moving forward. Again, you know, it was important for us to get this done and get it done under the original budget. We've done that, $99,000. We now have a SCADA system. Our operators can go in. They can see the whole plant on one computer, on one screen. I would have liked to have the pictures. I kind of dropped the ball on that, so we don't have pictures. But if anybody would like to come come to the plant, we can see you the SCADA system. With regard to future cost, if we want tech support, it's $5,000 a year. We expect to have maybe an operator in the immediate future, probably 8 hours a week operations time on it. I don't think that's permanent. I think that's kind of finally getting it commissioned in the end. The advantage to the plan is, again, our operators will be able to view and control from a central location. We'll be able to hold on to our information. And we have projects like what we have now going on, and the engineers are asking for a bunch of information. We'll be able to hand it to them. So with that, there's a lot, I'd like to say a lot more, but I want to keep it short, recognizing the meeting. So if the board has any questions, I'll be more than happy to answer.
Okay.
No, I appreciate your presentation.
No questions? Nope. Mary, any questions?
How many staff did you say you had trained on the system?
At this point, two.
Two. How many trainings does it usually take to consider yourself an operator of the system?
I think it's ongoing training. I don't know that there's any number. I think even the folks who do it for a living train constantly, yearly,
okay.
At least.
Thank you.
So let me, sorry, there's a lot. There's a lot here. So you're telling me we have a system that functions, but we've got some key components that are not in place, correct?
Yes. We don't have a historian, and we...
Okay, so with a historian, that means that you could trend, and then the moment you turn off your computer, I think I heard...
yes, exactly.
The moment you turn your computer off, you've lost that data because you're...
Yeah, you've lost the trends on it, yeah.
Okay, and so who made the decision to have staff do this? Now, if you want to talk about specialized work, this is specialized. I'm just kind of...
Me and Shannon and Paul.
Okay.
And Eric Sweeney. It's not... Shannon had had some experience down there in Santa Maria. I'd had some experience. It is specialized, but given the size of our plant and the technology involved and my experience, it's not... I don't think it's something that we can't tackle. I'll say this, at the convention I went to, they had one session called Operators Make the Best Engineers, and in that session they recommended that you have your staff. The guy said that when he does engineering for that, he requires his staff as part of that, so we were ahead of that.
So John, can you maybe help me, the board, folks who may be watching this? So what is the SCADA system, what is its primary function? And what are the benefits?
Monitoring, being able to monitor your plant. It's more advantageous in larger. Like if you're over in Pismo and they have 13 remote lift stations, but for a plant our size, it's simply being able to monitor when our people are there on the weekends or when they're not there. If we get it on the internet, they'll be able to look at from one screen and see how each piece of equipment is operating, what the flows are, what the speed of a different motor is, and when we configure it for controls, then they could immediately change the controls without having to go out there. I don't know how happy I am about that. I'd rather see them go out there, but it's mainly monitoring and recording information, and having that information recorded and stored for review and for analysis and diagnostic of system.
Wow. Okay. So basically, this was originally budgeted for $110,000, and Jesus,
I think
many years ago.
Yeah.
You said $99,000 has been spent.
Yes.
Is that staff time, or is that cost for equipment? What is that?
Staff time was never recorded. So it's just equipment and contractor time.
Okay. So for the components that are not missing, the two that you mentioned, because, I mean, I understand the trending, but if you're basically the moment you turn the computer off, you lose that. I don't know how would you, if you needed something historical to come back to. I'm just trying to.
We revert back to what we have now, which is some old papers. And so a good example is, you know, we recently went through a trouble with our suspended solids, and there were times when we would have liked to have known what was going on at night in the plant with regard to flows and pH changes and temperature changes, and we just don't have it. Okay. And so we don't have information, the best information. I can say that. So I think that, like I said, if you go to 99% of wastewater plants and water plants, there's a SCADA system there. It's
definitely
an advantage.
And I agree. I mean, I think I would agree with you that it's a benefit, and I've seen other companies that use it. And it's like you talk about being remote and having to be able to monitor. I'm just looking at, you know, $110,000 budgeted, $99,000, but we're still missing some parts that I think would be really helpful. Do we know how much those would cost? Or?
Those two together would cost a total of $10,000. I'd like to note that the 110 that was budgeted was a number from 2010. So,
I get it. I'm just saying, you know, I'm not sure. Well, I'm going to say thanks for bringing this information, and I think it's something that we may have to figure out how to get this fully functional and use it to what it's truly capable of.
Yeah.
So, but
yeah, and that would. With the one of the auto dialer, we actually have a version of it. It's just not the best version. We could we could work with what we have. And then the only thing we don't have is the historian software.
Okay.
And so that again, that's $4,900. So.
Okay. Thank you, John. Is there any member from the community that would like to address the item before the board?
Ron Arnoldson, I think in the past, B. Spencer has made a point of saying how good John's presentations are. And I think this is another example of what the worth of this man is to our district is. He's went out and done a heck of a job on this. I appreciate the fact that he's trying to do something in-house. Every time something happens in my job, we have got to call IT. We're down. We can't do anything. At least with the way he's trying to work things, if something happens, they can fix it. They don't have to call an outside agency. And I appreciate everything he said, and I don't understand it all, but I appreciate the fact that he does. Thank you, John.
Is there anyone else?
I'd just like to say again, good job, Mr. Clemens, and your team. As far as this SCADA system and doing it in-house, I think any time you have employees that are invested in a process, in being a part of that, it makes for a better team. And I, again, also applaud the fact that they're trying to do this in-house. We have the ability, this plant has the ability to, because there's such a small group of people, so intimately know everything about that plant. It's a win-win situation as far as I'm concerned to have those people who are there and responsible be the most knowledgeable about every aspect of the plant. So, you know, to me, $4,900 for some historian software is peanuts when you look at we're paying $450 a month rent on a trailer that no one can even occupy. So it is kind of about priorities. We're talking about something that allows them 24-hour access versus something that we don't even have access to. Thank you.
Is there anyone else? Seeing no one, let me close this to the public. This is a receive and file report. Okay. Let's move on to item number 8. This is correspondence received. Mr. Huebner.
We've included a letter that we received from the Special District Risk Management Authority. Came specifically to the board chair, so we thought we'd include it. We don't get very many letters, but it says that paid no property liability claim, so kudos to the district.
Thank you, Gerhardt. Okay, so that's item number 8.
Can I speak to that?
No, I'm not going to allow any comment on this.
It's on the agenda, John. I have the right to speak to it. It's attached to the packet.
No, you don't have the right to speak on every item, Julie.
Absolutely.
This is just about a letter that was submitted.
And I wanted to talk about the letter.
Okay.
Okay? It's on the agenda.
You have 3 minutes.
Yes. That's what I expect. Okay. I'm just going to read the first paragraph. This letter is to formally acknowledge the dedicated efforts of the South San Luis Obispo County Sanitation District's governing body, management, and staff towards proactive risk management and loss prevention training. Your agency's efforts have resulted in a no paid property liability claims for program year 2015-16. A paid claim for the purposes of this recognition represents the first payment on an open claim during the prior program year and excludes property claims. This is a great accomplishment, exclamation point. And I just want to underscore that this year, 15-16, that they're talking about,
The management began with Rick Sweet from July 1 through September 12. The management ended with Mr. Hubner, April 20th through June 30. Mr. Sweet made $4,000 a month. He had no car allowance, and he worked part-time. Mr. Hubner works full-time. He is paid $12,500 a month, and he gets a $350 car allowance. The time in between, the majority of the year, Mr. Clemens worked for $800 a month, part-time as administrator, full-time as superintendent, and he had no car allowance. And he gets this kind of kudos. You are so lucky. You are so lucky. Don't mess this up.
Anyone else want to talk? Speak? Okay, let me close it, bring it back. We are on item 9. This board is going to meet in closed session. Attorney, you want to cover this item?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The Board of Directors will reconvene in closed session to confer with and receive advice from legal counsel concerning pending litigation pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9. This closed session is proceeding following receipt of a threat of litigation outside of a public meeting, and a record of that threat has been made, and I'm providing that right here, if anyone should want to inspect it. And I understand that we don't have an alternate room here, so.
That is correct.
I guess.
We'll have to ask everyone to leave.
That would be. No, this is a memo that was prepared for anyone in the public who would like to see it. It just documents that we received, the district received that communication outside okay. of a public meeting. And that really doesn't say any more than that.
Okay, very good.
Okay.
Okay. We are reassessing the closed session. Thank you.
No, you have to take public comment on closed session.
Legal counsel,
Wendy,
would you?
You have, excuse
no,
me.
No, I'm going to talk to legal counsel.
Ahead.
Yes, having public comment on closed session would be, if it has not previously happened, appropriate.
Okay. We're going to let her make comment. Go ahead.
It's customary to take public comment before you go to closed session on the item that's before you. Your legal counsel said that there was pending litigation. This says significant exposure to litigation. Those are two different things. It may have been an error or I may have misunderstood. What I'm curious about, and it really comes down to the telephone call that I received from an investigator and how that's playing in. You've got a legal bill from an outside legal source, and I'm, you know, your board needs to talk about it, and maybe this is it, but the public has every right to know about it as well, and I hope you get out of the litigation business.
Well, we will find out what staff wants to talk with us about. Anyone else? Okay. We are now recessing the closed session.